Raptors are not taking the timeout. They're going to bring it down the floor and try to win it right here. 3 seconds to play. Van Vliet elevates from the elbow, and we're going to overtime. Raptors could win it with a three. Barnes advances. The heave, it counts if it goes off glass and rim, and Toronto loses in overtime by two.
Freddie's got a big game going. He didn't get off a great shot, I don't think, but he got a pretty decent shakedown and look there. I don't think it came off his hand great. It looked a little worse than it was, but I think the shot was created was pretty decent.
Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. That was Nick Nurse. Maybe not as disappointed as the three of us with your Toronto Raptors playing against Kevin Durant and the Long Island Nets. Although maybe that's not fair because the Raptors bench right now is also the Raptors 905. But
no.
I mean, Flynn, Champagne, and Bonga.
Bonga!
And Banton when available. Those are all like literally G League guys.
The Nets played eight players, and I didn't know who any of them were outside of Blake Griffin, who is completely washed and can barely move. Kevin Durant, who played every minute of that basketball game except for what, two?
Five.
Yeah.
And
Patty Mills, Australian sports legend. Mm.
Do you want to know the worst part about Durant playing 48 of the 53 minutes? The Raptors got stomped in the 5 minutes Durant was on the bench.
Yeah, I remember.
They lost them by seven.
Yeah.
13-6.
That's when they tried Scotty Barnes and his bench unit, yes. And that didn't work out so great yesterday.
I'm most disappointed that I got Raptors money line at plus 400 before they changed everything. And then, because I did it right when we were on the show. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get Raptors while they're good. And then all these players kept falling off the roster. And I'm like, oh my God. And the line kept going down and down. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make bank tonight.
So I forget which point in the third quarter it was, but I have a friend who tends to bet pretty high volume, and he had done the same thing. And I know that we're against
the cash out was there.
I texted him. I was like, once they made that comeback in the third, and then things started to look tenuous again toward the end of that quarter in the early fourth, I sent him the text. I was like, cash out, cash out, cash out. And I wouldn't do that for a $20 bet, but he bets higher volume. And I was like, you know what? This is too, at that point in the game too, it's such a flimsy game where you just know it's going to be stupid. I will say though, JD, or I will ask rather, you didn't know anyone but three of the Nets. Mm-hmm. You're a big fan of a fourth net now though. Big Kess.
Big Kess. So I'm devastated to learn that. Okay. I'll bring this there. I don't care. So when Blake announced he was leaving his former place of employment, I didn't know we were going to be working together. I had no idea. They never consulted me, obviously. They don't care what I
say. Things would have been different.
Otherwise,
for sure.
I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, if they had consulted me, I would have said, nope. The nerd? the number guy? Old calculator? No. No. So I genuinely thought he was going to work for an NBA front office. Because if you read Blake's work, it is more detailed, and I read a lot of NBA work. Actually, we have Kurt Goldsberry on the show later today. This is a good way to kind of segue this. Kurt Goldsberry is one of the writers that reminds me of Blake, just in a way that they are able to convey analytics in a digestible format. And I would assume that if you look at just what has happened in the hockey world, there are some people who have gotten jobs from media because they are good at that. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't you want that in a room full of people that have mixed backgrounds when it comes to mathematics, someone who can do those things. So I thought Blake was gone for a front office. Learning last night that he had Kess higher on his draft board than where the Raptors had him made me have to think about whether I would have rathered watching that guy play every night and no Blake here. Or Blake here and having to only watch that guy the one night where he was spectacular. So yes, I do know more Nets players now, but
big Kess.
I don't think there's any excuses for a loss like that. And no. I will say that yet again, we're talking about the Raptors closing basketball games. And it was a story from last year, right? It was, hey, can Siakam close ball games? Is he not clutch? Is there just something about this guy where he is flawed in this way? we come into the offseason and it's, hey, Siakam's got to be the man. And I don't mean for this show to be redundant, but this is now three times in a row where Fred has been asked to close games. Yeah. And I just don't really get it. I don't understand why it's a uniform thing. Because to me, like, it's one of those, hey, if you have three guys who should be touching the ball to close, or four guys
who's hot.
Right. Like, who do you have one? And that's sort of my approach to this, is that it shouldn't be predictable with the Raptors. Is I don't think it should always be Siakam. I don't think it should always be Gary Trent. I don't think it should always be Fred VanVleet. I don't think the Raptors have a closer like that. Mm-hmm. You're right, Ailish. Like, I'm down with who's hot. And last night, I wanted to see the guy that Brian Windhorst came on our show and said all decisions run through Scottie Barnes. Mm-hmm. Scottie Barnes is hitting fadeaways over Kevin Durant. He's hitting threes. He also airballed one in a horrific way. Sorry. But even still, give me the Scottie Barnes touch. Why is 4'8" Fred VanVleet doing that at the end of the game? Like, come on. Give Scottie Barnes a touch in that spot. I don't understand why it's a uniform thing. Do I care if Fred takes some of them? Of course not. But do I want him taking every single one and it's just like predetermined that it's going to be Fred VanVleet? I don't get it. Blake, explain this to me.
Yeah, I don't think it is necessarily. Nick Nurse said after
three in a row.
Yeah. Nick Nurse said after the game, he was open that he didn't think that that shot was the best shot, and the mid-range one came off of Fred's hands a little weird. I don't really have that much issue with the mid-range one he took for the winner, just because, like, the way Siakam and Barnes came down in transition, his options were to pass to Gary Trent, who was right beside him and well defended, or to pass to Chris Boucher, who shouldn't have been on the floor. So that one's tough. But yeah, the like 30-foot pull-up, the possession or two before that was a tougher one. And then he also, I think this one was in overtime, not in the end of the fourth, but there was a decent attempt going left at a driving layup through traffic that didn't rattle in. So Nick Nurse defended it a little bit after the game. He didn't quite get into, like, hey, why is it Fred every single time? And I know that that's maybe an overstatement, but if you look at Raptors possessions in the final 5 minutes of games this year with the score within five, VanVleet has taken 26 field goal attempts. No one else has taken more than 17. Mm-hmm. So it is clear that he's got the larger share. And on a night like that, you know, I do think, as much as there's probably some regression coming at some point, Gary Trent can get his own shot off a little bit too. Barnes was, I mean, the Barnes thing is just like, Barnes against Kevin Durant is not a great final possession matchup necessarily, but also, like, at this point, why not get that rep in, right? Mm-hmm. Like the way he was playing and the way that some of that stuff looked, he's got 23-12-5 while defending Durant a lot. You know, you could have gone that way. So there are a couple different ways you could go there. I think that the best version of this team and the most logical version of this team is not one where it's any one player who has the ball all the time in those situations. So VanVleet having 26, you know, he's 9 of 26 in those kind of clutch situations. He has got the line a decent amount, but 26 field goal attempts in 39 minutes.
Too many.
Like, that is a lot. That's not who Fred is as a player necessarily. A little bit more varied approach there. And again, like the weird Siakam doesn't touch the ball in those situations to start this year.
So there's two things off this. I have often complimented Fred VanVleet in one of my, I think, nicest ways I can, which is saying he gives you what you need and that he is a winner. And so my brain kind of thinks of it as a couple of things. I think that Fred VanVleet has definitely got a little bit more selfishness to him than we acknowledge sometimes, but also that's how you make it to the NBA when you're less than 6 feet tall, right?
It's also you have the ball in your hands for an offense that's not particularly good.
This is what I wanted to get to. Who am I to tell Fred not to take that shot when he is the winner and he's looking around the floor and he doesn't see the guy that he should be giving the ball to? Because I do believe if Siakam is that guy, Fred's giving him the ball, right? If Scottie Barnes is ready, he's giving him the ball. If he trusts Gary Trent Jr., I think he's giving him the ball. Maybe the issue isn't so much that it's Fred being selfish or Nurse not drawing up a play better or whatever. It's that the guy I trust the most on the Toronto Raptors, Fred VanVleet, is identifying his peers and saying, I have to be the one that does this. And that's terrifying to me because obviously Barnes, he's a rookie. Mm-hmm. You could understand why he wouldn't want to give it to him. But maybe that's part of the reason he's not giving it to him is because he's like, I don't want to show up other teammates here. Like, at least if it's me, that we can't, it doesn't look as bad on Siakam.
But back to Blake's point, it's like giving Scotty that opportunity is just going to help him grow as a player too. Like, I like the idea of putting him in that situation. He was hot. He was playing well.
Yeah.
How is he? He's a rookie. I get it. But, you know, that's kind of an opportunity to give yourself some confidence as well. So I don't like the idea of it just being, okay, every time it's Fred.
Yes, I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the secondary thought off of it. This is what scares me a little bit about a team that doesn't have real clarity of purpose, of where the direction is going. Are you trying to win every single game, or are you trying to win and develop? What is the prerogative here?
I don't know if they know sometimes.
Well, if it is develop, Scotty Barnes probably gets that opportunity, right? And he doesn't. It's Fred. And so you just look at these games, and I was going to ask you guys, is there any moral victory from this game because of the way Scotty Barnes played? Like, I'm not overly disappointed with that Raptors game because mm-hmm. Scotty Barnes played so well, and yet they lost, and they lost to essentially Kevin Durant and the G Leaguers.
Yeah, so just to close out the Fred thing, like, the one other factor there in the possession at the end of regulation, not the three, which was ill-advised and too mm-hmm. early, but the mid-range one to potentially win the game. They didn't call a timeout. They wanted to attack a defense that wasn't set. Mm. So, you know, some of this maybe wasn't as intentional as the discussion could sometimes frame it. Like, Fred gets that ball off the inbound and then it's live. There's not really enough time there to be like, hey, who do we want to have the ball? It's no, the point guard has the ball and it flows from there. So in terms of moral victories, no, I mean, you're not there as a franchise for the Raptors. And so many, I think any quote unquote moral victory would be undercut by the fact that all of the things that had been going well of late, the defense, the bench, Utah coming through and things like that, went the complete opposite direction. Malachi Flynn followed up his best game of the season, getting benched on a night that they only had 10 available bodies.
Mm.
And Svi got benched as well. And Justin Jambani and Bonga didn't come off the bench at all. So,
devastated about that.
And like, it's tough because Scotty Barnes, that is a monster game. We have Amy Audibert on at 7:30, and I want to ask her about this as well. Like, those are the games that you look at when you're talking about a young player who's has star potential. It's like, you went toe to toe with KD.
Mm-hmm.
You hit some mid-range turnarounds over KD. You defended KD. You stripped them on that play late where there ended up being a review, and you finished with 23-12-5 very efficiently. Now, the thing that undercuts that would be that, yeah, those Barnes and bench unit minutes, those are the minutes you lost that swung the game. But you can't hang that on Scotty Barnes. You can't be like, hey, this rookie who's 30 games into his career, not even, well, he couldn't carry Yuta Watanabe, Justin Champagne, Malachi Flynn, and Svi Mihailuk against a bunch of G Leaguers because, hey, that's a rookie and a bunch of G Leaguers.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, Scotty Barnes was awesome. If you're taking anything from this game, it's that. I don't think it counts as a moral victory because Scotty Barnes has been awesome a lot, and that's kind of an inexcusable game to lose, even acknowledging that Kevin Durant was amazing. But, yeah, Scotty Barnes, I mean, this is the thing that Brian Windhorst told us yesterday, right? And he was talking about it more from a transaction lens, but, like, everything you're thinking about this team is now through a bit of a Scotty Barnes lens.
Yeah. I just I just want to see that kid get a crack when he's going like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you didn't want to let the defense get set. Who were you so afraid of on that defense? I will say there were some questionable things from Nick Nurse yesterday, right? Closing with Chris Boucher being one of them. I know that they're down. They don't have any centers, so they have to play Boucher. And okay, fine. But I don't see what Chris Boucher does for you other than have length that's better than Yuta Watanabe to close a possession. Like, he completely blew the Patty Mills
completely.
Play.
Like, that is, look, Patty Mills made a tough shot, and that's an unbelievable possession where he relocates getting off the ball. Chris Boucher is standing in the restricted area with nobody around him.
Yeah, he's not doing anything. And he's... I know this sounds really harsh, but that is, again, another moment why I say things like you don't win with Chris Boucher, because I don't think Chris Boucher stays engaged throughout entire basketball games. And I think that Chris Boucher is very much a me first basketball player who doesn't think about the we often. That there's a reason why, you know, Amy's screaming during the broadcast that he gets fired up when he gets those blocks. It's because those are his personal statistics. Mm-hmm. They're not team stats. I'm
also,
sorry.
You know what would have helped this game not go to overtime and be a loss? Mm. Not getting a technical foul.
Yeah, that would have been good too. So,
the Boucher thing, just to kind of wrap that, like the idea that the team is, you know, that that's a fill in for size or presence on the glass or whatever, mm-hmm. Whatever the explanation is, the Raptors have their lowest defensive rebounding rate. If you look at the individual on offs, Chris Boucher, when Chris Boucher is on the floor, is when they have the lowest defensive rebounding rate. And like, it's a little lower for Utah and Malachi Flynn, but those guys haven't played nearly as many minutes and we're chopping up the sample a little too small.
You just compared Malachi Flynn's rebounding rate to a guy who's 6'10".
Yeah. Now, sorry, the team's rebounding rate when they're on the floor. But
I know,
still.
But I get it. But I'm just saying that those are the names that you're bringing up. Is you're qualifying for Malachi Flynn.
This is the thing. Is Chris Boucher is an excellent offensive rebounder, but when you're minus 20 on the glass or whatever they finished in that game, minus 19, and you give up a four. The Nets grabbed over 40% of their own misses.
No, that's bad.
You can't tell me that Chris Boucher being on the floor there was necessary for the rebounding, because it didn't materialize that way.
So,
sorry, I know we had to get onto other stuff, but the Boucher as center thing can sometimes drive me mad.
I kind of want to tie this in with, but maybe I'll do this later, the tweet on trial, because we should just probably talk about Steph Curry.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry, you had a question for me about Fred.
Well, yeah, I just, the only thing that comes up with Fred that I'm curious about with those final decisions is that his, and I can't tell if this is just confirmation bias or just how I feel about him as a shooter. I know that his 3-point percentage is up this year. It's not his career high, but it's around that. His pull-up threes, because that was always something that we made a huge deal out of with Kyle Lowry, was how he had one of the best pull-up threes in the NBA, like the Kyle Lowry pull-up three. And I feel like Fred has completely, if there's anything where we go, hey, what is the parallel between these two players, right, which we often like to draw. I think some of them we like really overemphasize, we stretch them out. Mm-hmm. It's an oversimplification. But that is the thing that reminds me of Lowry the most with Fred, is that he is fearless with that pull-up three, especially in transition. And a lot of times, I feel very confident in it, and I wondered where it kind of stood amongst the league leaders in the NBA when it comes to that shot in particular above the break.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit of a difficult one, because it's something where volume is as important as percentage, where like you look around the league, who is allowed to take pull-up threes above the break?
Right.
Well, it tends to be good shooters and guys who have the ball in their hands a lot. So when you sort through the leaderboards, it could be a little, you know, like, hey, you're not seeing some of the league's best 3-point shooters there, and you're seeing some names that are a little curious. Also keep in mind, league pull-up 3-point percentage, 32.3%. So our bar here is much lower. Fred so far this year is 13th in the league in attempts, pulling up on threes, 30.6%, which sounds bad. It's not great. That's under a point per possession. But of the top 20 people in volume, that's not far off the middle. It's a little below average in terms of high volume pull-up 3-point shooters.
Well, now I like that final Fred possession even less.
Yeah. So last year he was at 35.3% on top 15 volume. The years before that, 32.7% and 32.1%. So last year's kind of, weirdly, last year was his worst individual 3-point shooting season overall, but it was his best pull-up 3-point shooting season. Which is mostly just like noise and anomaly. But all of this is to say Fred is the 4-year track record on him is that he's only a slightly above average pull up 3-point shooter, but that's still super valuable when you can use that weapon at volume.
So not as good as Lowry was.
No, Lowry's at 36.3% on those right now.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, the Kyle Lowry pull up three in transition is like the Kyle Lowry
thing. The shot. Yeah.
Other than you know, fallen on your butt, drawn charges.
But this is why I'm glad we can do the Blake does my homework thing, because I watch Fred and he takes that shot so often, mm-hmm. and I don't really think about the times he misses it. I think about the times he hits it and I go, man, that's really dangerous. He's really taken that from Kyle. It's something that sticks out. So what stuck out to you?
Sorry, by the way, Lowry over 35% each of the last 3 years on that shot.
Yeah, he's very good at it. So what stuck out to you guys about when you watched Steph Curry break that record last night?
Ooh, that was awesome, eh?
Yeah.
Like, I just thought that they did a really good job at letting him have that moment where even on the road, like I didn't know how the Knicks were going to let that kind of play. They had an immediate stoppage, a longer timeout. They let them have their moment. And we talked about it like before we signed off for the day, like, oh, it's going to be like, I mean, the Knicks, like they have a little bit of a bitter taste in their mouth and like, are they going to play the bing bong? But like all joking aside, they did a really, really special kind of like on court, quick tribute in the moment that made me feel like that was awesome. Like, I'm really glad that they acknowledged the moment.
I like to now think about a reality where the Knicks were like, no timeout. They play through it.
Yeah. Wasn't a guarantee.
Oh, then Tibbs is standing at the scorer's table like, we got to play a basketball game here. Let's go. You know, let's delay a game warning. Let's get this going. What do you think about Blake?
Yeah, I think the thing that I sat with the most, obviously it's amazing. It's a lot of fun highlights and stuff. Steph Curry has set this record very early. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of time left for Steph Curry. He's 33. You know, he's got at least a couple seasons left, and shooting tends to be one of the skills that ages most gracefully if you're at the elite end of that. The thing that I said with the most, and you know what? It's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Mm. My something to chew on is Steph Curry has broken the NBA's all-time three-point record at age 33 with lots of playing time left in his career. Is this the next unbreakable record in sports by the time Steph Curry is done?
Ooh.
You know, the Gretzky points is obviously the big one. Steph Curry with 4, 5, 6 more years to tack onto this and then, you know, eventually transition mm-hmm. into maybe more of a role player slash specialist role like Ray Allen did, the guy who he took the record from. I know that the game has changed to where three-point volume is much higher around the league in large part because of Steph, but you're something to chew on. This could be an unbreakable record by the time Steph's done.
Yum, yum, yum.
I don't know. I just look at the way the game is going and how much more of an emphasis there is on shooting. I think that there's a potential that it gets caught. There's also this thing that I think of with Steph where it's like the Tiger Woods thing. Are you going to stay on tour if you're not the best? And will Steph Curry stick around to play a modified, better version of a J.J. Redick? Like, you tend to think, okay, there's always room for guys like that. Redick, mm-hmm. a killer, right? He retired 36. It's done, right? So I don't know if Steph plays until he's 40 years old. Maybe he does. He's obviously a much better player than J.J. Redick. I'm just saying that in terms of him going into that Ray Allen role. Ray Allen, part of who he is a guy who is like very regimented and has used basketball as a way of kind of staying within his somewhat version of OCD. Ray Allen just stuck around. He hung around. He never wanted to leave the game of basketball. For years, he had already taken on a role of like a secondary piece, right? When he went to the Boston Celtics mm-hmm. and it was the big three, Ray was the third guy. And he kind of closed out the rest of his career that way. In his prime, he wasn't the main guy. I have my questions as to whether Steph is going to play into age 37, age 38. We're starting to do this with athletes where we're just assuming that they're going to do these things. And so do I think that it's going to be a really like a next near impossible record to break? Absolutely, I do. But I'm not convinced he's going to play as long as we think he's going to play. And I'm also not convinced about what the future of volume of three-point shots looks like, considering that when he entered the league, it was, I think, the team leader was the Orlando Magic at 27 a game, which would come in as dead last right now in the NBA.
So, yes, the longevity factor, obviously, when we're talking any unbreakable record, the longevity factor is huge. Even with the spike in three-point shooting around the league, though, mm-hmm. nobody is even close to Steph Curry in terms of threes per game. So even if we chop that up and look at active leaders, Duncan Robinson is second at 3.2 threes made per game in his career. Curry's up at 3.8.
Yep.
Buddy Hield and Damian Lillard barely scrape by three. The biggest active threat to Steph's record might be James Harden, who has played 115 games more and isn't really all that close because he's averaged a three less per game.
Mm-hmm.
The Steph Curry volume, even in a modern NBA, even in an NBA that might expand to that even more, I do think, you know, we can talk to Kirk Goldsberry about this at 9:30 when he's on with us. We've kind of seemed to have hit like the equilibrium for three-point volume now, where the balance between the value of a three and the value of an average two are about even. So obviously, you know, the league is fluid, things change. But I don't know that the three-point volume is going to continue expanding the way it has over the last 15, 20 years. So Steph being not only, I don't know, Steph's going to have at least some more longevity. And then also just like if you're hitting half a three to a three more per anyone else per game, even in the modern NBA, I don't know. I think you're going to be pretty safe. He's probably got at least a couple years left to keep padding this and yeah, he's got 4 years left on his contract after this.
I guess it's just when we're comparing it to the Gretzky points record, like I truly don't believe that the Gretzky points record will ever be touched.
Hockey would need to fundamentally change what it looks like as a sport.
That's what I mean is, so when we're saying like the Gretzky points record to me is it's never going to happen. It's not ever going to happen. The Curry one, I'm not as sure of, even with all that stuff in mind.
So
that's all.
Assuming Steph is relatively healthy over the life of this contract, which has 4 3/4 years left. So not 82 games a year, but like say 70 games a year at something less than the 3 point per game that he's had so far in his career. We're still talking like 1,000 extra threes on top of the record.
And I think he'll definitely have 1,000 extra threes. And
it's not Gretzky level, but I think this is going to be pretty close to the unbreakable basketball record.
In a way, I hope it is, because we do this a lot with the whole, because like, you know, one of the conversations I want to have around Steph is there ever been a more influential athlete in the last 20 years in any sport? And we talk about that a lot, like, oh, the game, there's so many threes, it's all because of Steph. And even in all of that, I love like bringing up those numbers, because it's kind of one of those humbling things for everybody that thinks, well, they're just going to have more guys who shoot threes and it's all going to be everybody trying to be Steph Curry. And even think about the way the Atlanta Hawks were discussed when they drafted Trae Young, was they're going to have their own Steph Curry. And you go, don't diminish Steph Curry that way. Like,
there's no such thing.
That's exactly it, is that this is, you know, a combination of genetics and hard work and, timing. It's a lot of different special things that all came together at one time for us to get this.
Yeah, Trae Young, excellent high-volume three-point shooter, 1 3 less per game than Steph Curry. So that's how high the bar is. Anyway, the record there is...
It doesn't sound that bad until you remember it's like 82 a season.
Yeah, and the longevity factor. We'll talk to Kirk Goldsberry a little bit more about that at 9:30, and we'll talk to Amy Audibert a little bit more about that Raptors game last night after the break. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 Fan. We're going to be joined by Amy Audibert, Raptors sideline reporter, but made a stellar debut on color for last night's game with the Raptors. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you.
Oh, my God. We were talking about...
I think so.
Yeah, we were talking about you in our group chat last night, like, damn, keep her on this role. We were really pumped for you. We thought you had an amazing night. How was that? Like, how was that experience? I mean, did you have much time to know in advance? Were you thrown into the fire because you killed it?
I appreciate that. I knew just shortly before the rest of the world via Twitter. So, like you all said on Twitter, I got a phone call, but well, obviously, my first thought is everybody okay. You know, we are very much a family, too, on the other side of things. So we find out everyone's okay. I think if we've learned anything in the last year and a half, it's that stuff happens quickly. So, yeah, I mean, I was fortunate in that I hadn't sat in that chair since maybe, I think it was like last February, but I had done 3905 games recently. So, yeah, of course, like, you know, you don't say no when you get those calls, right? You just, open your books and start kind of tweaking the way you were approaching the game a little bit. But, Yeah, I mean, still a little bit of a heartbreaker, right? I mean,
they couldn't have pulled it out for you. That's rude.
And they gave us overtime. Like, at the end of regulation, I was like, listen, I didn't think that went too bad. Now we have an extra 5 minutes. Like, something's going to happen here. But, no, it was all right.
My question would be, how come you have so much success translating it from the 905, and then the Raptors bench can't do it? It doesn't, you know, it's G League for everyone, including the broadcast team, but one of them seems to be translating a lot better to the NBA level right now.
Well, first of all, they were really good Sacramento. Yeah, let's give them that. Second of all, I'm just really old. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. So I appreciate that, Blake. I don't know. You know, I think right after it, I'm always like, I want to run it back. I would do this different. I do this different. So, and I'm sure that it's the same thing when they watch their film, right? Because it was definitely, and I mean, they're two different teams, two different situations, but that's what I said after Blake is just, that they just needed that one guy to, and I thought Udo was pretty good defensively, did some great things last night, but they just need that one guy off the bench to like provide, and even for a couple minutes at a time, just, you know, consistent scoring or some sort of threat, because those four guys were just, you know, they did their thing. It just wasn't enough.
This is just, you know, you might be a basketball player, but this is just, you know, very hockey Canadian answers from you, where we tried to put a little spotlight on you. We're like, yo, Amy, you did really great. And you're like, it's about other people.
No,
and I was thinking about my teammates, and, you know, I'm going back to the film and seeing how I can get better. I'm like, okay, that's cool. You did a great job. So what did you think what did you think of those final few Fred possessions? Because that's what we spent the vast majority of our time talking about in the last block when it came to the Raptors. Like, he starts coming down the floor. It's another ISO Fred play to close the game. That's three in a row. What goes through your mind?
I mean, so the first thing, and I said this on air, and I really do believe it, Fred has earned the green light to do whatever he wants, right? He's earned it. I mean, he's earned those shots and those moments. And I thought, especially in the, was it the last? No, not the last one. The last one was the elbow, which wasn't the best shot. I understood them not taking a timeout to try to see if they could get something quick. But the one when he had David Duke, and he beat him. He got him all the way to the paint, but then kind of just shortchanged the layout because I think KD rotated and he didn't have his hands up, but he definitely changed his shot. So, I mean, that's a layup. Fred finishes that most of the time, right? He really does. So, again, it's heartbreaking because, I mean, the guy that throughout not only the last couple of years of his career, but even this season, who has, and we saw in the third quarter, comes out and kind of changes the ball game, earned the right to take the shot. Unfortunately, they didn't go in for him or for anybody.
I know that, again, like you said, they didn't take the time out there, so you're kind of attacking an unset defense, and there's not as much time to think through that decision. Let's play it out where they do call a timeout and they do have the time to be a little more methodical about that. Are you still putting the ball in Fred's hands? Would you have liked to see Scottie Barnes get a chance in that situation, given the way he was going there?
Well, I like Fred if David Duke's guarding him, right? Like, just in terms of like experience, what he can do. I don't think that was not a good decision. However, at the same time, I would have liked to have seen Fred try to get to the rim. Now his mid-range has been great. So again, like, I understood the shot, but I think it was just a little bit chaotic, which they wanted, as you said. So yeah, Scotty, sure. I mean, Gary was shooting the heck out of the ball, right? That's a good option. We've seen Gary hit some pretty high pressure shots as well. And I mean, Pascal, he's got size advantage usually. So they have options, and it's just, you really want Fred to hit that shot because it's the Oklahoma City game, right? So I know I'm being a little bit kind of not saying anything too risky, but it's not because I don't believe it. It's just I go with the guys who earn those shots, and, I mean, Fred did. So, of course, everyone now, you look back and you say, coulda, shoulda, woulda, maybe called the timeout or maybe got a different shot, but that's life, right? We just don't get to do that, so there's no rewind button.
So I'm with you on this, like, from a lot of different ways, and I like, no one would disagree with you, I think, when it comes to, hey, Fred has earned this right? Like, we all look around the room, we say the same thing, that we acknowledge that this is his team, which is weird, though, just in the sense of the entire offseason narrative was about Pascal Siakam becoming the man, and Fred backing that up at a podium saying that he's got to be able to take a million shots and nobody blinks. And that's the man. That's quote unquote, you know, that's what they wanted. And I guess the question is to you, like, you're a player And if Fred is getting that green light and it is his team and he's deciding three straight games not to give Siakam a touch in those spots, what does that say about sort of just the dynamic of the team? Because that to me says more about Siakam than in some ways it actually does about Fred, the way that Fred might perceive his teammates.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not inside the locker room, so I can't tell you exactly what's going on there. But I'd like to believe, of course, I'm just trying to be optimistic here, is Nick, one thing that Pascal's done a really, really good job of doing since his return is, like, not trying to force things too much, right? Of course, there's a couple possessions where you're like, not the best shot. But for the most part, I think he's been really, really good at just kind of taking what the game is giving to him. And you hope that's the mindset and the same thing, right? If he doesn't have the ball in his hands, it's not his shot. Of course he wants it. I think every guy wants it. But that's, again, it's just not where the Raptors, where they are right now. Fred had the ball in his hands, and it goes back to, and I mean, because the other thing too is, don't forget, Fred did a lot of deferring early on in the season. He did a lot of deferring, especially in those first couple weeks. So now that, and when he comes out and has the third quarter, he does. There's five guys on the court and one guy gets the shot. There's only one basketball. So I hear what you're saying too, but I can't fully answer that because I'm not in the locker room. But at the same time, I think these guys, you're talking about guys who've been around the league, who came in together, who grinded. So at least you're giving the shot up to somebody who has earned it through the work over the years, hasn't just walked into the spot to blow it up. They understand that it's a long season. There's still a lot of ball left to play. And if they want a postseason, which they probably do, that's an extended contract, right? That's winning for your organization and really your country. At this point, you want a postseason, then you got to keep things together internally.
One player that you've been able to see come up through his experience is Malachi Flynn. And now we've talked about it quite often. He's up and down. And I'm hoping that you maybe have a little bit more insight, having covered him with the Raptors 905 and seeing him now, like why he's inconsistent or what you want more from his game.
Well, I thought when he first got, the first game he got into the 905, I think it was the Scotiabank game, actually, and played some big minutes right after when someone asked him, may have been me, I don't remember, that was like last week. So I think he said, you know, his biggest priority at this point with the 905 is getting wins, because he's just, I don't sound funny, but I mean, he's not playing in big minutes in games, and they're not practicing crazy, so you can go run on the treadmill as much as you want. Nothing's like playing games, so there is a part of me that definitely has that feel for him, because at the point guard position, if you're gassed, it's going to be hard to communicate and facilitate on top of just play the game. So, I mean, he hasn't shot the ball particularly well. The numbers don't lie, and that's tough for him. And I'm a big Malachi fan. I really like him, and I really want to see him do well, because when you look at the last couple of years of his life and his career, it's just been craziness. The way that he had to step in last year and this year playing a completely different role. So, I mean, obviously, like we said before, everyone was creating in Sacramento, which was 2 nights ago. And you kind of, like, last night, the bench just, they weren't as great when they got in. So, and that includes Malachi. But I still think, I know he likes to shoot the ball. I think he can be a very good facilitator. And I would love to see him get more comfortable out there in that role, because it puts Fred off the ball, and I think that that's a really nice look for the Raptors.
And I think too, you know, he has a little bit of a chemistry with Delano Banton. The odd time they get to play minutes together instead of competing for the same role. Flynn's up and down has been, you know, kind of indicative of the entire bench. And again, you said, like you said, they had a season best night as a unit against Sacramento, and then they're back to not contributing much last night. And that's kind of been the story for the Raptors. They come into last night's game having won 4 of 5, almost back to 500, 4-3 on that extended homestand, and now with a couple home games ahead. I guess I just kind of want to zoom out and ask where you're at with the team in general right now, because yeah, they are 13-15. They're back in the play-in mix, and things have trended upward, but trended upward against a Milwaukee team with no Giannis, a Memphis team with no Ja, a Brooklyn team with no nobody. Are you seeing underneath the swing in record, are you seeing the growth that you need to see from this group right now?
I think it's a tough way to look at it, Blake, because those guys with an OG or with a Kem, or even you could say with a Precious, they get to play different roles and they get to do different things. Right now, you still get the sense that there's like this, not scramble, but just kind of show up and put together what they can with what's available today, who's available today. Guess what? That's not going to change. I mean, if we know one thing in the last, what, 24 to 48 hours, it's that the NBA is a going to be a very delicate spot in the next, and I'd say at least month or two, right? So it's just that no one's been able to find consistency. So I guess my answer is I'm still buying my ticket every because they're fun. I still want to go see the show because I really never know. I don't necessarily know exactly. And even with minutes, like you don't know who's going to play, who's going to have to step in and play 20, who's not going to make it off the bench because of just the inconsistencies of everything. So I know Bobby Webster's talked about that they believe they can develop in a winning atmosphere and in a winning program because of the way that Pascal and Fred and that core got to kind of come up and end up winning a championship. So I know that the faith is still there. This isn't by any means a season where they're going, you know what, we don't care about winning games. They're still going to compete hard. They're still going to try to win games. But I do think, and especially in the last week when you see Scotty really start combining not only, we know, his energy that he brings, but then with, I think you're seeing more confidence in what he can do and what he should do. So I think that those things still need to happen, and I think they still will.
Scotty Barnes not lacking for confidence necessarily over the course of his rookie season so far, but how big for him do you think a night like last night can be where that's a, hey, you're going toe to toe with a star. And I don't mean you're guarding Kevin Durant. I mean, Kevin Durant is guarding you and you're attempting turnarounds against him. When we look back on the Scotty Barnes rookie season and see how he grows over the course of the year, how big do you think last night is for him?
Yeah, I mean, those are things you don't measure on a box score, but you hope he watches that film a couple times, right, on his down days, because some of his shots over KD were just super impressive, and it was kind of funny because that's what KD does to everybody, right? That turnaround jumper, gets the ball high, can't touch it, and then just, like, doesn't even touch rim. Scotty started showing that. So I think, yeah, I don't think his confidence has not been good, but I think that there's like this accountability where it's like, hey, no, we need you to go take over this ball game right now. We need you to take this shot. We need you to look for you. Right. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, when you start doing that thing, because some of those shots work like turnaround fadeaways where 90% of the league, you're going, you probably could have gotten a better shot, but then there's that like top tier guy such as a Kevin Durant. And I think the hope is that that is a Scotty Barnes sooner than later, that can go find a shot and get a shot off over anybody in the league. And well, when you're doing it over KD, I mean, that's a pretty tough defender.
Yeah, it sure is. And that's the thing with guys like KD is there are good shots and bad shots. And then there are guys like KD where there's no such thing as a bad shot. And you hope Barnes can get there. Amy Audibert, Raptors sideline reporter, and for one night, color analyst. Hope we get to see and hear more and more of you, because again, you did an awesome job. I really enjoyed you on the call. Keep up all the great work.
I appreciate it, Blake. I'll say this. When we get the note that you're coming on the pre-show, it just, everyone has to step their game up. So you just kind of keep everybody accountable up top and early.
Thanks, Amy. Amy Audibert, you can check her out on any Sportsnet broadcast of the Raptors and some of the 905 games. It's hard to tell. The 905 broadcast crew is as difficult to guess as who's going to be playing for the 905 sometimes. Mm. Again, we'll say it not just to, you know, pump her tires, but she was awesome last night. She's really great.
Yo, Bing Bong.
You're
sitting over there fist pumping as they're talking about Scotty Barnes. What do you want to tell Scotty Barnes right now?
What do you mean?
What do you
want to say, Joe Biden, right now? Bing Bong.
Bing Barnes.
Bing Barnes.
Is that I mean, maybe if they had won, but this was what Ariel pushed back on last week, is that it's not a Brooklyn Nets thing.
You know,
it shouldn't be.
Ariel can lay off, okay?
Yeah.
See, you don't own Bing Bong. You don't own Bing Bonga. Yeah.
Well,
I own that.
Ariel came on here and he went full heelwani, which is, of course, a wrestling thing. And by the way, if you're into things like that, the WWE Holiday Tour is headed to the Coca-Cola Coliseum on Wednesday, December 29th, and we want to send you. All you have to do is tune into the Fan Morning Show all week long and listen for the cue to call. We'll be giving away a pair of tickets later this morning and every day of the rest of the week.
Nice.
So stay tuned for that. Also, Leaf tickets being given away a little later
we're
as well.
So friendly. We yeah. Just love
JD, how
our
come
listeners.
You're not giving away tickets? Ailish is giving away Leaf tickets all the time. I'm giving away wrestling tickets.
As if I would keep them for myself.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Love it.
I don't care about you. I don't care about anybody. And just me. It's me. I want the tickets.
I like that in the same show, we're not even halfway through the show, and you've already done a bit about how you're a good guy,
I'm
and now
guy.
You're doing a bit about how you're selfish and you wouldn't share tickets.
No, here's the thing. Honesty is a good trait. It's better to be honest with people. I'm not fake. I'm not out there pretending I'd rather you have tickets than me. I'm telling you straight up.
Like when my friend's courtside tickets got canceled.
Exactly. Like what? You'd rather hang out with somebody that lies to your face, that is disingenuous? Not me. Is that a good person? A liar? A liar. That's what you think is good, Blake? Interesting. That says a lot about you. For me, it's like, be honest, you know, just tell the truth. And that's what I try to do here. I try to tell it the way that I see it. I shoot straight, all right?
Did you know that Scotty Barnes is only 2,957 3-points away from the NBA record?
That's pretty close.
Only.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting there, right?
He's in range. He's only 20 years old, as we like, pointed out last night,
hey,
right?
Do the math, Blake. How many does he need to get a game?
I don't know. How many games do you think he's going to play?
Well,
I don't know. You should predict that, too. Yeah. Like, if he plays another 10
Blake,
years.
Don't ask us questions back that make sense about math, okay?
Just, like, if we say, give me something. He's 2,957 3-points. Threes away from the NBA record.
He's closing in. Last night, he's closing
what,
in.
A year?
He should have had...
Next season?
Yeah, he should have had at least one more opportunity. I really do think so.
Yeah.
Which is, again, though, weird. We're probably going to end up doing this so much. And I don't mean it to be hot take or whatever. But, yeah, I do wonder that, Blake, if that alternate timeline of, hey, if they call a timeout there...
Yeah.
Does he get it?
I mean, the math generally says you're okay attacking a defense like that, especially against a kind of shaky, inexperienced team like that. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing with one-possession games. You can play it back any number of ways, right?
I'm not that upset about the call. I'm not that upset about Fred having it, honestly. Like, I'm just not. Because, well, one, I don't really care if the Raptors win or lose because it's like, what's the point? So do I really care about them getting in a play-in game this year and losing to Charlotte? Like, not really. But I just want to see them develop, and I want to get more questions than answers by the end of the season. Or, sorry, more answers than questions. Although, I don't know, maybe actually for radio it's better.
Speaking of answers, at Scotty Barnes' current pace, it would take him 3,696 games to match Steph Curry if Steph Curry never takes another three.
It's feasible.
I think he does it.
3,700 games. That's not that
what
bad.
What are the odds on our betting app?
That's
here?
Only 45 seasons of never missing a game.
Well, that's fine.
And staying at the same 0.8. threes if per game.
So you're saying there's a chance. Oh my God,
wow.
Vic.
You and Vic with the mind meld.
That was really cool.